State of the Empire is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse, and is brought to you in part by Consequence of Sound, the web's foremost source of music and film news, reviews, and insights. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to State of the Empire, Nerdy Show's Star Wars speculation podcast, where we look for news in Alderaan places. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hey, I'm Doug.
Hey, I'm Matt.
And I'm Rex.
Welcome back to the show, Rex. It's been a while.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here again. I love it.
In this episode, we're celebrating Rogue Friday, the Rogue One variant of Force Friday, which happened last year, the day when Star Wars merchandise comes out for a new movie. It's a new holiday that Disney's invented to get more money.
Yay.
And you guys actually, Matt travels to Rex to do this event together. So far, 2 years running.
Yes, it's great. And I fly. The idea is he comes here for Force Friday and I go there for the movie.
So that's up to Seattle for Force Friday, down to Los Angeles for the actual film release.
Yes, that's it.
You guys are very committed to your long distance relationship and I applaud what you go through.
We love each other.
Yeah.
We love each other.
Yeah.
Could be a little more enthusiastic.
So in this episode, we're going to be talking about all the things that have come out. Some that we expected, some that we didn't, and what information we can glean from this about Rogue One. But never fear, this is State of the Empire, and we respect your desire to have news and information without spoilers, so we sequester all of them behind the blast doors at the end of the episode. It'll be a very clearly denoted space where you will be safe. And in fact, this time around, I don't know how much we actually have that's truly spoilerific for Rogue One. It's more so stuff for Episode 8, actually. So if that wets your whistle, then you know what to do. Go beyond the threshold and beyond the blast doors. In addition to that, we got a little bit of Willow Watch and Indie Inquiry, as well as some other assorted stuff from the Star Wars universe. But this will be an interesting episode, because we've never done two episodes of State of the Empire really back-to-back like this. We did one last week to cover all the news between our last episode and the end of September. And then here we are, assuming that we were going to get a lot to talk about for Rogue Friday. But it's kind of slim pickings. So you guys did a midnight release at Toys R Us.
Yes, that was our only option this year. Last year, a lot of stores did it, but this year it was just Toys R Us. And it was fun. I would say we got there around 8 p.m. and there was nobody there, so we went and grabbed some food. We got back, there was one person in line, and then by the time midnight, or by the time 11:45, 11:40-ish rang around, there was probably about 20 or so people in line. So it got a little bit populated by the end, but it was, I would say, way less overall than last year's.
Yeah, and at first I dreaded the smaller launch. I don't know, just the excitement didn't seem to be there, but I actually kind of liked the intimacy by the end. It was actually kind of nice just to talk Star Wars with a few people instead of being overwhelmed by the event itself.
Yeah, and the people that we were there with were very clearly like the same kind of nerd that, you know, we all are, and a lot of really good conversations about Clone Wars and Rebels and the EU and the new movies, and it was just, yeah, it was like a really kind of cool little community Star Wars powwow.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's going to change next year when Episode 8 comes out and be the same degree of intensity as last year?
I think that depends on how much Grandmaster Luke action they show us going in. I really do.
Yeah, I think that it kind of feels like, in so many ways, I mean, I'm sure you guys have already discussed this at length, but Disney is playing this movie very close to their chest, it seems, and not blowing it out like they did with The Force Awakens. And I think this year's Force Friday kind of reflected that pretty clearly. It didn't seem like there's anywhere as many products as there were last year, or really any. You know, most of the employees that we spoke to yesterday didn't even know it was a thing until today or until last night.
Yeah, that was actually kind of really surprising. Every single Toys R Us, most of the employees had no idea they were even doing anything for midnight.
Wow.
So that's kind of a sign that it wasn't as pushed as hard, right? Because last year when we did this, I called a few stores the afternoon of, and everybody was like very clear on what the rules were going to be and how things were going to go. And you could tell they were like debriefed or briefed on it. But this year, everybody was kind of just seemed to be playing it by ear.
Yeah, that's really odd. I didn't do anything at midnight. I'm not even sure if we had options in Orlando for midnight stuff. But there is a single Disney store in town after the great, I don't know when it happened, but whenever it was that Disney store went from having a store in every mall to having like maybe a store per city. There's just one now, and it's at a massive tourist destination mall. And weirdly, they were open at 6 a.m. today. And I did not...
Is it for Force Friday?
Yes.
Okay.
And I did not do that. Because that's... I'd much rather stay up to midnight than wake up for fucking 6 a.m.
That's actually... Yeah, that's a good point. I think if I had the option, I would definitely rather do something at midnight than an early morning release type thing.
They were open till 10 anyway. I don't know why they didn't do it.
Yeah.
Probably the mall, right? It was probably more of a mall rule thing.
I suppose it could have been.
Must have been, yeah.
But nothing else at the mall was open at 6. And I wasn't there. I went to a nearby Target first at 8. And there's only one other person there who was interested in Star Wars stuff, a much older woman. I don't know what her game was, but I guess she probably had a grandkid. but she knew what she was doing, though. But that was it. Just two lonely souls looking for Star Wars, 8 in the morning at a Target. And then I drove over to Disney Store, and it was like practically untouched. I asked one of the employees, "Hey, so you guys really were open at 6? And they're like, "Yep." And I was like, "So many people come here for that?" And they're like, "Nope."
Yeah, but I think a lot of that has to do again with how much Disney is not promoting this event, right? I feel like if they made a thing and a spectacle out of it, people would have been there. I would assume.
Yeah, the hype for the film is pretty strong. But not for this day, not for this this merch release.
Which is interesting because, honestly, I'm part of the big collecting world, and I buy a lot of Star Wars toys and all that. And a lot of the fans are very pleased with the products this time around, much more than they were for a lot of the Force Awakens products. The quality of the figures is much higher, and it might not be as varied of a collection of products, but it seems like across the board, the things that are there are of better build and better quality.
That's because I don't think they had a lot of time to work with the things in Force Awakens. Like, yeah. I think there was definitely more time for them to work on Rogue One products.
Yeah, and with Rogue One products, it's weird. I think, you know, we've got the action figures were easy to do. Something I didn't see, and it might still take a while for this to trickle out, but something that I was really hoping to see were more children's books, because that's where we've gotten a lot of our juiciest leaks for Force Awakens. Like,
there's like none of that for this.
That's what I'm saying. There's no literature. When Force Friday happened last year, we had those three Journey to the Force Awakened kind of solo stories. You know, the Han, Leia, and Chewie, or Han, Leia, and Luke, and then three adaptations of the original trilogy themselves, plus Lost Stars, plus the Aftermath, plus Shattered Empire. Like, there was so much literature that came out around now, if not the day of. And this year, nothing.
Well, Disney canceled a lot.
Did they? Oh, they canceled a lot of stuff?
Well, like the comic book. There's no more Rogue One comic
book. Oh, yep. Right, yeah.
They canceled the Rogue One comic.
And Matt actually made a really great point last night, too, when we were looking at all the toys, was the observation of none of the toys this time around have any audio or dialogue like the Force Awakens toys did.
It's because this movie is finalized so much later because so much has changed about this movie. I guarantee you this movie is a completely different creature than it was, you know, like the difference between Force Awakens like a year before it came out and Force Friday probably wasn't as great as the difference that as Rogue One a year ago and Rogue Friday. Like this movie, like it's you can't deny how much has changed about this film by this point because so little has been revealed and cemented about this film.
Yeah, and then we got the late game composer swap. I mean, it's a little late to be learning about that, you know?
And there's still all the stuff with Saw Gerrera and his hair. Like, I'm seeing him with his hair on some products and some posters, him without his hair on some products and other posters. It's super weird.
And Forrest Whitaker did say that it was a change that happened in the film. But,
okay. But it's still like a weird mixed message marketing thing, right? Like, I don't see too many examples of that in big movies like this where it's like, they usually just have the promo shot and that's what they use. They don't use it like from a, I don't know. It's like the same costume, but different hair. It's just the hair. So it's a weird kind of difference between them.
Haven't they shown him delivering the same lines with different, with the hair difference? He's certainly in the same location.
No. It's different. It's different, different lines, different hair. He's never repeated himself with different.
I feel like he was at least in the same house, which, I mean, of course, you know, it could be.
But it was just a shallow focus. We can't tell. It's a big blur behind him.
Maybe it's just a very nice scene of him giving himself a haircut in his bathroom.
Hey, it could be where he's just like, we're going to go undercover.
I mean,
so I got to shave my head.
I legit think that it's a matter of he shows up and he looks kind of ragged. And then he's like, oh, shit, I'm on a mission. And then he comes back and he's got a shaved head. And they're like, hey, looking good, pal. Like,
or he starts with a shaved head and he's like, I got to look stylish for this mission. And he grows hair really fast.
He goes,
he just pushes it out.
He's an alien. He just looks human. It's a thing they do. But yeah, it was, I don't know about you guys, but I'm really reaching for all the things that I've uncovered about the merch that came out with no books, because I agree, Matt, like 100%, like this is clearly a result of them not knowing what information they actually can say about the movie. And the action figures, they had plenty of time to work on those. They don't need to say much about them at all.
No, especially a lot of them are just troopers, different types of troopers, you know, like, quite frankly, our Zuvio for this year that gets cut may just be a random, you know, hover ground crew trooper tank. Man, you know, like there's so many variants of Stormtrooper and Imperial Soldier in this movie as far as merchandising. Like, it wouldn't shock me if one of them just never made it to the film.
Yeah,
I think that could be the Imperial Ground Crew, probably, if I had to guess. More on them later, but I do want to take a moment to really reflect on Constable Zuvio and how, you know, a year ago on Force Friday he died for our sins. And
how could we forget?
Yeah.
Oh. I'll never forget.
We'll always remember you, Constable Zuvio.
Who are we talking about?
You you godless heathen.
Come on, man. It's too soon.
In spite of this just wretched man's chiding, I would like to lead us all in a prayer now. If we could take hands.
That's great.
Yes, for sure.
All right.
I'll stay seated for this one.
Constable Zuvio, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy rebel scum, thy law be done, on Jakku as it is in Bespin. There you stay on target peg to forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. J.J. Abrams, in Teek's name, amen.
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 Wow, that was something, man.
I'm just saying, yeah. I don't see a lot of evidence for Zuvio's existence. I've seen the movie.
We got a great
a lot there.
We got a great story. We got two amazing action figures in 3 1/4 scale and Black Series. What more do you want? The man's a legend.
I want to see him. I have yet to see him.
He's done more than you ever
have. He has a Twitter account, okay? That means he's real.
Yeah, it doesn't get realer than that. So you need to show some fucking respect.
That was a beautiful eulogy, Cap. Thank you.
That was beautiful.
Is Zuvio considered canon, or is he going to be like Star Wars Legends now?
He's canon. Look it up. Canon. It's on Wikipedia.
Yeah, he's got a story and everything.
But he's not in anything.
He's
not even in a book.
No, he is in a book. He has a short story in Tales from a Galaxy Far, Far Away.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's right. Yeah.
And it was great.
Story.
It was great.
It was arguably the best story I've ever read, ever.
Arguably. I want to hear you argue with yourself, like, then again, Zuvio. 1984, pretty good. No Zuvio.
No Zuvio.
So, what'd you guys see?
For me, the most exciting thing was one of the Lego sets features an AT-ST, and Baz, Jiang Wen's character in this movie, he's in that set. So that stands to reason. I don't think we've heard or seen anything that AT-STs were in this movie. And now the Chicken Walker's back. I think it's safe to say that we probably get some Chicken Walkers.
That's really cool. I didn't see that at all.
So
that was basically just an AT-ST playset that he's in?
Yeah, there was, you know, it comes with a Imperial pilot, you know, the driver, you know, whatever they want to call him. And I want to say a Rebel trooper, and then Baz. And definitely the background, it looks like they're on Scarif.
Yeah.
So I think we're in for some Chicken Walker action, which, I mean...
It might have actually been Jedha.
You think so?
Yeah, because I feel like it looked like that same kind of location that the hover tank is in. I could be wrong, but it might be Jedha. I don't know.
So Scarif or Scarif is the tropical planet that we've seen a lot of, and then Jedha is the older world that's in a frozen tundra.
Yeah,
is it a tundra?
They've said it's a frozen desert, yeah.
Oh.
And you're absolutely correct. It's definitely Jedha.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, there's been a couple of... I feel like I am in love with the U-Wing. I am having a real love affair with that ship, and everything that I've seen with it gets me really excited. We didn't get to see it in person, but there's a display of the U-Wing at Walmart, which is just this giant cardboard, like, back... Remember, like, episode one, they had the Naboo Starfighters and everything like that?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's cardboard, it's not plastic, but it's, like, a big scale version of the U-Wing. And, like, in the side of it, you see all of these Rebel Troopers that look, like, right out of Endor Rebel Trooper-looking outfits, like, standing in there. And in my head, I'm just like, holy shit, this is gonna be... This ship is awesome. And then I actually bought the toy of the U-Wing because I'm so in love with that ship. And, like, the wings sweep open and close, and I'm just, like, visualizing in my head how amazing this thing's going to look in the movie. I'm very excited for it.
That display sounds amazing.
Yeah, if you got a Walmart anywhere near you, you should go see if they have it.
The Lego U-Wing, it has what looks like the Edu variations of Jyn and Cassian, but on the background, and Edu... is, I guess we're not really sure what it is yet as far as a planet goes. It's cold. That's all we know.
Yeah. Rainy.
But the background on the box is jungle-like, and you can see Aztec temples in the background, like it's Yavin.
Oh. So I will say, like, the only thing that I would bet on this was that very first piece of concept art we ever saw for Rogue One, which, with all the soldiers running in the rain with the floodlights coming off the ships, like, I know those are U-Wings, and we're seeing a lot of footage in the trailers of, like, X-Wings flying in rain, mountains, and we've seen characters run in the rain, and I feel like the U-Wings are the main dropships for that Edu, or however you pronounce it, planet assault. Hmm. I think that's what's going to happen. And I think that space monkey dude that's shooting the turret, I think he's shooting out the side of a U-Wing.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you guys also see the Krennic shuttle Lego set?
Yeah. That looks awesome.
It's pretty cool. And I don't know what to make of this or if to make anything of it, but the set also comes with Bodhi Rook and Pow. Pow's the screamy rebel guy. And it might just be that they're combatants in, I guess, the space where Krennic's ship lands. But... when we've seen, I think we've seen Krennic's ship in the context of Scarif, but the actual background of this Lego playset, if you can make anything of it, looks more like frozen wastes, not snowy, but maybe the frozen tundra kind of, or frozen desert kind of landscape.
All the ships in this movie look so cool.
Yeah, in fact, you know, it's Krennic's ship is weird because to me it looks. It looks too cool. Like, we never saw anything remotely as stylish as that in the original trilogy ever. It's more like Kylo's ship, you know?
The shuttle Tidarium, to me, always felt really sleek. But yeah, it's not that sleek.
Yeah.
Well, it is an experimental, like, it's like, isn't it just like one of a kind?
Potentially. I don't think we know for sure yet. Mm. And as far as action figures, I don't, did you guys see the POW? Tupac, the guy, the screamy rebel dude.
I got it.
Oh yeah. So how about he has, Doug? He has an articulated lower jaw flap.
Yeah, yeah, he's really good at screaming. He's really good at it.
Pow is the one that actually has like they revealed what he is screaming, that like his culture has like a battle cry.
Yeah,
and it's on the back of the box.
We mentioned it last episode because there's a lot of the 3 1/4 figures. They are 3 3/4 figures. They leaked well over a week ago. So we were able to go through a lot of the details last episode.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of the sad stuff about, you know, this particular movie is that so much has come, like, as far as not a lot of information has come out, but the surprise of information that we were supposed to get on a particular day, a holiday like Rogue Friday, has already come out.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Now, the one of the things we didn't get was the Imperial Ground Crew, which is a cool-looking figure, but so was Zuvio. And this seems like a very utilitarian thing. And I noted last episode that on the box, like, if it didn't say Imperial Ground Crew, you'd think, holy shit, look at this crazy bounty hunter with these laser batons.
Yeah, right? I thought they were batons, too, until I saw the Lego set where he's just guiding a TIE fighter. And I'm like, oh, that's not as cool.
Come over here. Come over here. Just get it.
Don't belittle that. That's just an important job.
So is being a constable of an outlaw planet, Doug. Here's for just for the sake of it, here's what it says in the back of the Imperial Ground Crew's box. This doesn't mean much. It doesn't mean anything, really. Imperial installations, whether space-bound or ground-based, buzz with activity and vehicular traffic. Skilled ground crews sort through this would-be chaos and see the smooth operation of Imperial craft through regular maintenance.
Hell yeah.
The TIE Interceptor really? Lego comes with Imperial Ground Crew, and the background of that box looks like Scarif. So if we're going to see these guys at all, that's probably where it's going to be.
See, you know the Imperial Ground Crew is doing a good job when you don't even notice they're there. They do the job so well, it's seamless.
Now, here's we're talking about batons. Here's something weird. Jyn comes with a baton in multiple iterations of her.
Oh, and she also dressed up like a TIE pilot at one point, too. She has the batons on her back in that one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Now, it both in the 3 3/4 figure, she has batons in one of the versions of her, and then also there's a Lego buildable figure of her as Sergeant Jyn Erso, and it sees her against this is one of the most distinct backgrounds of any of these things I've seen. And again, I know their backgrounds on boxes, they don't necessarily mean anything, but they did sync up pretty well with Force Awakens. So on this box for the Jyn Erso Lego buildable figure is a rocky canyon-like environment at twilight.
I think that's Edu.
Yeah, I think it is too. And I think it's looked like the terrain that we see a shot of the X-Wings flying through.
Yep. And there's also that footage in like the Comic-Con reels that they showed where it's like pouring rain and they're running with the wind machines blowing on them and all that. And I think it's all in the same area.
You guys mentioned the lack of talking figures. There is one.
And oh, really?
We addressed it in the last episode, the Interact-Tech Stormtrooper.
Oh, right.
It's a Stormtrooper that comes with a jetpack, which hints to something cool in Rogue One, because this is a specifically Rogue One action figure. And it boasts 65 lights and sounds. Well, I played with this fucker this morning.
Ooh, so you got a list of more stuff he says.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I have a recording.
Oh, let's go for it.
Ooh. It's not great. The recording's fine, but the trooper... Well, yeah. Here we go.
Let's take this fight to the sky. Orders received.
Nice.
Mission is a go.
Yeah.
Let's move. Orders received. Mission is a go. Orders received.
I was like, oh, there's 65. Mission is a 65 go. Lights and sounds?
Let's move.
Where are they?
Orders received.
This guy's fucking busy.
Mission is a go.
Getting shit done.
I gotta be honest. If we're pretending that Let's Take This Fight to the Skies is not the next big Star Wars line.
May the Force be with you. Let's take this fight to the skies.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Well,
and Wedge is all like, I'll see you there, bitch.
That would be incredible. Don't tease me like that.
Oh my God, is Wedge gonna be in this movie?
They got to reference him at least, like just be like, "Oh, Captain Antilles won't be here." Oh shit! All right, you know, like
I'd rather have a Captain Syndulla mention.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. That would be pretty rad. Now I'm not done. Oh, there's more. There's lots more.
Oh, sorry.
But there's the thing. This toy is really awkward. He on the front of the box it says, "Here's what you do. You can if you pick him up and hold him horizontal, he makes flight sounds.
Ooh.
If you shake him, he makes battle sounds.
He pukes in his helmet."
and he has a symbol underneath his armor that lights up. So for battle sounds, there's an Imperial insignia. And if it's flight sounds, and that insignia is surrounded by basically the two wings of a TIE fighter. But then on the back of the toy, it's like, if you put the blaster in his hand, he's in attack mode. If you put the jetpack on him, he's in flight mode. And I'm just, if you tap his belt, that's where the sound effects come from. And I'm just like, oh my God, he's repeating the same things over and over again. I expected 65 things. I got to mine this for information. Where's my nuggets of plot? I didn't really get anything, but
did you try the sounds in different positions? Whether he's in flight mode?
I did eventually start shaking him, and I got something a little bit different.
Take this fight to the sky. Head for the canyon. Rebels spotted.
And then it just...
Let's take this fight to the motherfucking skies.
But I mean, but it's, you know, once I got him going, then it was just another loop. So, you know, I don't know how far they stretched the concept of 65 lights and sounds, but I'm dubious about the accuracy of that statement.
Yeah, it seems a little disingenuous, just a little bit.
Maybe it's like timed, whereas like after the movie comes out, he's gonna start saying spoiler shit all over the place. Killed another one. You know, like he'll say that by name. Like,
Cassian Andor's dead. I repeat, Cassian Andor's dead.
K2SO has betrayed us. Hunt him down.
We figured out who Snoke is, sir. It's Mace Windu.
There's a private Snoke here requesting to join us.
Now that would be amazing.
Snoke was a jetpack trooper. Come in, Commander Snoke.
Snoke him if you got him.
Is that the name of the episode?
I don't know. This is probably the only time we're going to talk about Snoke in it, but... I've probably made that joke before. I say it to myself all the time if I want a good laugh. Here's one thing that did surprise me on Rogue Friday was the elite figures. Have you guys heard about these things?
Mm-hmm.
Are they new to Rogue One? Is this something that existed before?
So, Rex, correct me if I'm wrong, but that the Elite series is just the evolution of the die-cast metal figures from the Force Friday launch.
Yeah, I think they're the same. I think they may have even been called Elite last year, but I don't know if they were just using that as heavily. But yeah, they're basically just the same diecast figures.
Yeah, I didn't know they were a thing. So when I hit the Disney store, I was really surprised to see them. They're exclusive figures, and they're metal action figures.
And they're pretty good. They're pretty nice. Like, some of the paint is a little flat, but... And also, the only other issue with them is they're kind of out of scale with any other 6-inch figures. They're like an inch or two taller. But they're really high quality. They're nice.
Yeah, like I thought like the Elite for Phasma was way better with than the Black Series one.
Yeah, they did a really good job with that line.
Well, yeah, if you're doing something metallic, it makes sense. It is a shame they're not in scale. I thought they looked like maybe they were the same size as Black Series, but I could see how
just
they're
not. Just a little bigger. Just a little bit bigger.
And you're right, the painting leaves something to be desired. The sculpting and everything for the black figures, just because it's plastic, you can get a greater degree of, I guess, intricacy, probably at the same price point. But these are $25 action figures, and they are heavy as shit.
Well, yeah, but also the nice thing about them, at least from last year, was that there were a lot of Elite series vehicles. So there were like First Order TIEs and I want to say Resistance X-Wings. So those I recall being pretty nice.
Yeah, but I mean, they're obviously not to scale with the 8-inch figures or anything, but they had like larger die-cast model ships. Now that you said that, Matt, if they make a U-Wing, I must have it.
I didn't see any vehicles at all for that. I mean, I suppose maybe it's only a matter of time, but one the lineup is kind of what you'd expect. It's Jin, Cassian, Bodhi, K2, Chirrut, Baze, a Death Trooper. But then the weirdest thing is a black astromech called C2B5.
Yeah. I've seen, they've made a couple of different toys for him. And they haven't talked about him at all, but I know there's like a regular normal scale version of him as well. But no idea what he's about.
And there was copy on the back of the box, and it didn't yield any information whatsoever.
Hmm.
I mean, he looks like the black astromechs that have been Imperial droids in Rebels that Chopper has been disguising himself as with like horrible paint jobs.
Yeah.
But I wonder if that's a part of the same line or if those are different.
I don't know, but what I do know is if you only want to get one K2 figure, this elite one is probably the one to do, because being that he's a robot and he's already kind of like a little bit chromey, but like kind of matte as well, then the elite figure thing is the best bet.
And I will say the Black Series K2 figure is also very nice. It's a really well done.
One last piece of toy news. This is something that didn't come out today, as far as I know, but they image was released online, two images actually, showing off a body part of Saw Gerrera we hadn't seen before in the pop fig, and also a photo of the 3¾ figure. We see that he has a robot foot.
An independently intelligent, it's a droid. It's a droid foot. And yeah, I couldn't believe they're going the droid foot route. That's crazy.
So you see one of his feet has a sandal on it, and the other one is just straight up a robot. And then when I noticed that, I was like, well, you know, and you know what? He's got one hand with a glove and one hand without a glove. So I guess he's seen some shit. He is literally war torn.
Yeah, and in the first teaser, he's kind of limping with a walking stick.
Yeah.
So do you think maybe he gets injured in the movie?
I think he probably comes that way. I think he's already real junked up. Yeah. So that's all I've got for toys and such. How about you guys? Any other insights from all that?
I guess the only other thing that I know kind of was surprising to Matt and I both was the TIE Striker. The pod isn't just a circle. It's like a very long kind of cylinder.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost makes it seem like it would have two people in there, like a gunner facing backwards and kind of like in The Force Awakens, they're TIE fighters. But I don't know. But I guess now that I'm looking at some of the other art, it's always been like that. But in my head, it was always just like more like a TIE interceptor where it was just the ball in the middle with the angled wings. But no, it's this kind of long bomber-esque pill-shaped kind of thing.
Interesting. Yeah, I wonder what's going on back there.
What's going on back there?
So was it like just a solid piece of plastic in the figure or in the vehicle?
Yeah, so the cockpit opens up and you can put somebody in there, but you don't, there's nothing behind it, so it doesn't really give any hints about what's going on back there.
Huh.
What's going on back there? That's like the new segment. It's like, hey, what's going on back there? And we're talking only about different ships and what's going on back there, you know,
or the weird spatial placement of vehicles and in action figures, and how the U-wing, for example, it's got this one man cockpit. What's going on back there, though? You know,
what's going on back there? I gotta know.
All I know is if you know when we're out seeing Rogue One. If some trooper turns to the other and says, let's take this fight to the skies, I'm going to stand and cheer.
Oh, my God. Me too.
I don't care if I'm the only one in the theater. I was like, yeah! I was like, is that like an insight? Is it like a line? Is it from the book or something? Is this a trooper we got to pay attention to?
Yeah, it's Snoke! To the
that's
sky!
Snoke right there. That's Snoke! I called it! Proof! Confirmed!
We have a little bit of Rogue One casting. We found out that Valine Kane is playing Lyra Erso, Jen Erso's mom. She filmed in Iceland, and her one comment that she said about the film is that it, quote, has a really edgy, independent vibe.
Cool.
Which, at this point, I've heard so many times from so many different people, I'm wondering if they've been told to say that.
Yeah.
I don't want to be suspicious of that, but I just, you know, it just keeps, you keep hearing something, and, well, anyway, so Her filming in Iceland is interesting because that does confirm that all the shots we've seen of, say, the Death Trooper with the doll and everything else that was in that kind of frozen wasteland space, much of that could be flashback stuff.
Right.
There is a young Jyn Erso, and here's her mom because she's going to disappear. She's going to die, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the actress is actually really close to Felicity Jones's age, so that would make sense that there's some sort of flashback.
Yeah. And then finally, we know when we're going to get the last Rogue One trailer, and it is at the end of October. October 28th in Russia, probably the internet then too, and November 4th in the U.S., and that is coming with Doctor Strange. This was leaked from a Russian expo when the marketing director of the Russian subdivision of the Walt Disney Company mentioned this. Hopefully she still has a job. and that's Rogue One. That's all we've got. Moving on to Han Solo, there was a weird interview that happened recently between the Huffington Post and Billy Dee Williams. They said, in recent weeks, there's been rumors surrounding the possibility of Donald Glover portraying a younger version of you. Are there any favorites you'd consider for the role? And Billy Dee said, I don't know who Donald Glover is. But as far as I'm concerned, I would say that the Star Wars producers should leave that character alone. I don't think you can do any more than what I did with the character. I think I made that character something very special, and I can't imagine anybody else doing it, to be very frank with you.
Oh, boy.
They then asked, well, okay, if the opportunity presented itself, would you have any interest in reprising your role for a future Star Wars film? And he said, yeah, if that's what you want me to do, I'd be very happy to do it as an old man. But I don't know if anybody could bring the kind of quality that I brought to any of those characters I've played. It's only because I'm not a person who thinks in terms of ethnicity. I think in terms of bringing what's very special about my point of view as an individual, and I think that's probably why those characters worked in a certain way, which is a very confusing answer.
Well, I think he's basically just saying he wasn't even playing Lando. He was just playing Billy Dee Williams.
I guess that's... Yeah, you could take that from that.
Now, I'm inclined to agree with him that... yeah, he did something very special with Lando because Billy Dee is a naturally extremely charming guy. I like to see anybody else sell Colt 45 as well.
Mm.
But, I think that, you know, the Han Solo movie is unnecessary, but, we like it or not, it's happening, and there's probably going to be a young Lando, and I just hope that it's Shameik Moore and not Donald Glover, because I think he'd do a better job.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I don't know. I still think in the end, like, you know, we'd like to think these stories are inspiring and that you can take things from them. And that if Star Wars couldn't be improved upon, then Empire Strikes Back wouldn't be a better movie than A New Hope. And you could very easily argue that Empire Strikes Back is a better movie than A New Hope. And I think you can say the same thing about approaching characters. Like, do we think that, you know, the first issue of Batman was the best representation of Batman and everything else? You know, it's just like, you know, it. There's no reason to think someone couldn't do as good of a job, if not better, or worse than Lando. And, you know, I want to see more interpretations. And it may be an unnecessary movie, but I don't think that means it's going to be a bad movie. I think it'll be a great movie.
So back in 2010, we actually had our own brief interview with Billy Dee Williams. Something we want to do is take some interviews with Star Wars personalities that never made it into State of the Empire, that predate State of the Empire, and include them here, you know, for fun. We didn't talk to him about Star Wars at all. And also the recording is a little rough because back in the day, we didn't have great equipment. So it's myself and Hex at MegaCon talking to Billy Dee Williams in 2010.
Going into the role of Harvey Dent, did you and Tim Burton have sort of a concept of what you were going to do as Two-Face if that ever came to pass?
We never got around to it because everything changed.
Yeah.
So that was the end of that.
So no, you didn't
it's
like
as
think.
As simple as that.
Someday I'm gonna be Two-Face, and it's gonna be so great. That never happened.
I look forward to it. That's the reason why I took the role.
Yeah.
Because I really was looking forward to doing Two-Face, and I thought it was an interesting way of doing it, but it didn't work out.
Yeah. So, I wish it had. In an alternate universe, I know it has.
And when you got the role, were you then a fan of Batman?
Oh, cool. I grew up with Batman.
Yeah.
Dark Knight, yes, of course.
What did you think of the recent reimagining of Harvey Dent? the new movies?
I think the first one was true to what that character was all about. And then it got off into a lot of, you know, experimenting with all the technology. I think this guy who killed himself, who played the character,
Heath Ledger, yeah,
he didn't play him. He played
Joker. Yeah.
Joker. But I think it got back to that whole dark, foreboding kind of feeling that it should have. I think to talk about that character. That character's a nutcase.
Yeah.
It's all nutcase. But I think that's what makes it all really interesting and fascinating.
Yeah.
But somewhere in between, I got so locked into doing all of these things. I used to get headaches.
Colors and lights.
I got headaches.
Yeah.
Watching the movies. There's so much going on. But they got away from telling a story.
Recently, you had a cameo in the TV show Lost.
You know, Jimmy Kimmel a big fan of Lost, and periodically he would ask me to do parodies on some of the episodes. So the Lost people saw it, and they asked me to come on and play myself playing a killer, which I thought was an interesting, unique idea. So that's how I ended up doing that.
Originally, that story arc with the Nickley and Paolo characters, that was going to be longer. And my understanding was originally the plan was for your character to be in the show more often, but they killed off those characters. Is that true?
I don't know. I know that, I think that Lost, though, you know, many years ago with Lloyd Bridges, I did a television movie called Lost Flight. And it was that story about these people who get stranded on an island. Wondered if they sort of pulled it from that idea.
I'm gonna look that up.
Yeah, look it up.
We did look up that movie he was talking about, Lost Flight, and it is a pretty interesting situation. Here's the discussion that happened in the episode following us playing that interview for the first time.
Well, Billy Dee told me to look up the Lost Flight film starring Lloyd Bridges, and I did. It's a television movie. It was aired in the U.S. in 1969. It was actually in Australian theaters in 1970. It's about a plane that's flying to Sydney, and Lloyd Bridges is the captain of this airliner, and it crashes, and he has to help the crew and the passengers survive on a deserted jungle island in the midst of a power struggle. It's called an adult version of Lord of the Flies, and they say it hasn't been shown in the U.S. for about 20 years. The movie was designed as a pilot for a weekly TV series that didn't get greenlit, so they converted it into a full movie format. But in 1976, CBS used some of the plane crash footage for a similar concept show called Stranded. It took place some time after the initial plane crash, and the survivors had created a village from the parts of the broken plane. The central figure of this plot was a young boy. It was geared towards younger audiences than the previous show was. There was a lagoon inhabited by a presumed monster. There was an implication that there was a group that had split off from the main group, and they made camp elsewhere, and they were called the Others.
Oh, shit.
Whoa.
So there's actually some interesting similarities between these two things. And the plane crash scene from Lost Flight is actually, pretty impressively done. It would have been good for a film, so it was really good for a television movie in 1969.
And there you have it. That's some weird shit. Now, formerly, you actually the crash scene for Lost Flight was on YouTube, but unfortunately, it's not anymore. What is on YouTube right now is actually a clip from it looks like a TV show from the 90s about pilots that never got picked up, and they show a montage of what they don't realize at the time, because it was the 90s, is a bunch of shows that seemingly inspired Lost.
Huh.
So we'll link to that on this episode's page, where you can check out all of those, including some footage from this Billy Dee Williams movie. You don't see any Billy Dee Williams in it, unfortunately, but he was really young at the time. Now, let's branch out to another franchise. You guys ready for Willow Watch?
Always ready for Willow Watch.
Willow.
So, Doug, I understand that you have a reading for us.
Yeah, because there's not a lot of news in the world of Willow, we decided...
For a change.
Yeah, yeah, which, you know, I'm always surprised whenever it's like, hey, there's new news. It's like, really? It gets me so excited. we decided to look back into the Willow source book and just see if there's any cool little plot points. And there was an interesting little story about Mad Mardigan. There's actually a lot in this book that really details his history. Talks about his youth and how he became a Knight of Galadorn. But the story that I'm going to read you really quick is how he first left the order, when he first left the Knights of Galadorn. He's eventually brought back in because there's going to be a big fight against Bavmorda, and they sort of call him out of retirement. But this is when he was still a fairly young man, and when he left the first time. So this is titled Mad Mardigan's Fall. One of the surviving knights of Galadorn, Garrig Toth, says Mad Mardigan took the oaths of knighthood more seriously than his recorded accounts allow. Aye, though he was young, he worked all the harder to cleave to the ideal of honor, as did we all, but perhaps with not so much concern for failure. The knights of Galadorn, known across the kingdom for unimpeachable integrity, sworn never to betray a secret, never to desert a comrade in need, never to tire in defense of Galadorn. Their reputation earned them the name the Shining Legion. The young Mad Mardigan tried to live by that high standard, much as his friend Eric did. But he lacked Eric's stolidity, and this lack caused disaster. Mad Mardigan had an unknown enemy in the court. Not one of the knights, but a minister, Gerenth by name, who disliked the boy's cocksure manner and envied his great skill. Gerenth put Carissima, as we will call her, whatever her actual name, up to a flirtation with Mad Mardigan. Gerenth led her to think that she would be testing the knight's reputation for secrecy. He told Carissima to endear herself with Mad Mardigan, then to see what secrets he would betray. In a sense, the minister's scheme went astray, for Carissima not only made the young knight fall in love with her, she in turn fell for Mad Mardigan. She refused to speak to Gerenth of what she may have learned. But Gerenth turned even this to his advantage. He presented to Carissima evidence that Mad Mardigan had betrayed their love. Whether Gerenth had to fabricate this evidence is unknown, but fraud was not beneath him. Carissima became enraged and stormed off to confront Mad Mardigan. Gerenth had timed this revelation to coincide with the ceremony of great dignity, the annual Knights Processional. In this ritual, the Knights of Galadorn stood before the throne and renewed their oaths of loyalty. Carissima arrived in the crowded hall just as Mad Mardigan was renewing his oath. "Let any who would speak ill of my knighthood come forth," he said, expecting to continue unchallenged, as was the usual. But Carissima shouted, "I can speak a great deal of ill!" And so, before all the knights, she did. Garrig Toth, the knight, recounting this episode, still averts his eyes when recalling it. "She was impetuous, truly," he says. "When she thought he had thrown her away, destroyed everything they both held dear, she turned and fought like a panther. She yelled out everything he had told her in confidence, not only secrets that proved he'd betrayed his oath, terrible though that was, but also gossip, dreams, ambitions, and merciful stars, the things only one lover knows of another. Awful, awful." But didn't Mad Mardigan try to reply? Didn't the knights try to remove this disruptive woman from the ceremony? The answer tells much of the young Mad Mardigan, and of the origins of his character as we know it today. "After the first shock, he stood there," says Garrig. "He looked at her straight on, and a more despairing expression I never saw on any battlefield. Of course, the king ordered for the knights to remove her, less for Mad Mardigan's sake than for the audience's, as we were embarrassed as he. But Mad Mardigan said clearly, 'Let her speak.' They were the only words he spoke. After that, there was nothing for us to do but sit and listen. He stood there, head up, with no expression, just swallowing once in a while. Why did fast-talking Mad Mardigan not offer an excuse, shout back, or deny everything? Until after that day, Mad Mardigan did not speak so quickly," says Garrig. "He had a young man's idea of honor, the kind that can twist to strike you, like a knife in your hand. I think he felt that if someone had reason to speak ill of him, he should, in honesty, hear their accusations. And none would dispute that, though there are more appropriate times for such things. But for the rest, I think, either Mad Mardigan would not question the word of his beloved, or thought dignifying her accusations with a reply would bring dishonor to him. As though she had not done this already, a confused young man, I would say." Garrig concludes the account. "She finished in tears and ran from the hall. Nobody could say anything. Mad Mardigan walked from the room by another exit, like a man heading for the scaffold. He never saw her again, and we didn't see much of him either."
Now, it's interesting because from talking to Bob Dolman, the screenwriter for Willow, like almost all the material of the Willow source book is not anything that he wrote.
Correct.
Nothing that he composed in, production for the film. But there is some, like, seemingly a connectivity between the contents of the Willow source book and the additional elements of the story that were placed in Waylon Drew's Willow novelization.
Mm-hmm.
And there, I have a hard time remembering the exact nature of it, but they do confront a little bit of Mad Mardigan's origin in Drew's novel as well. And I remember it being the one part that didn't quite sync up, but also kind of did. Like, it didn't fully disavow each other. It's just sort of the nature of explaining what happened to Mad Mardigan in Galadorn mm-hmm. is somewhat confused.
Because mm-hmm. It is a little confusing even here, because after this, he goes and he's like out wandering, you know, the land as like a sellsword, and they have to bring him back. But then he gets like, you know, he gets kicked out again. Like, so I don't really know how they planned it out like this. If it was meant to be like, oh, this was a disgrace, but then he left of his own accord. Well, they wanted him back so bad, and now it's even a bigger disgrace because there was a mistake that was made, but he wasn't entirely to blame, depending on whose story you want to believe. So I don't know. It's an interesting back and forth that they got going with this, but it still doesn't really explain how he wound up in the, you know, in the crow cage. Like they
call him a thief.
Yeah, they call him a thief in the movie, but in the book, they do explain how he gets in the cage, but it has nothing to do with being a thief. He's not even accused of being a thief. It's like, it's a completely unrelated event, and I don't know how he gets the reputation for being a thief at all, at least according to the Willow source book. So, I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know which of this I should make headcanon or not, because some of it's really good and endearing, and the other is just like interesting but doesn't explain anything.
Well, we do still plan to do another all Willow Watch episode. We're going to speak to Alan Varney, the author of the Willow source book. So that's something that is still in the cards.
Get some answers.
Yeah. Anyway, thus ends Willow Watch. And begins Indie Inquiry. Now, last episode, we talked about the impending release of an animated Indiana Jones fan film by Patrick Schoenmaker. It was called The Adventures of Indiana Jones, something he'd been working on for 5 years, since 2011. This is an artist who was commissioned to do a poster for Kingdom of the Crystal Skull in the style of, well, basically, if Indiana Jones was an animated series. It got him thinking, and then he produced a short, but we didn't know what it was going to be like. We didn't know how long it was going to be. We didn't know what was up with it. Well, it was great, but it was also only a minute and 41 seconds long with credits.
Mm-hmm.
5 years.
Really, it's only about 1 minute, really, when you think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's super cool. It's got a lot of the characters, though. No Sala, but you get some Marcus and some Short Round. And it's kind of like the opening to what would be an Indiana Jones animated television series. It's mm-hmm. sort of a little, one sort of micro-adventure that segues through many locales and so on. A lot of fun, and hopefully it's not the end of Patrick Schoenmaker working with Indiana Jones. Not surprisingly, a lot of the comments on YouTube are like, whoa, can this please be a thing?
Yeah, like, where's the rest of it? I want to see more of it. It's like, no, this is it.
in only a day's time, it got... of last I checked, 200,000 views.
Nice.
So it's still chugging right along. 26 dislikes. I don't. Who are these people?
Jerks. There's no more of this. Ugh. Dislike. I mean, I love it. I want more. But since there is no more of it, I gotta give a thumb down.
There's
I think I've made my point.
Now, when in the credits, you'll see there's actually a number of animators listed, but he actually did all the backgrounds, layouts, key poses, and about 2/3 of the actual animation. The rest were interns that he was able to summon in because he is a working person. That's probably why it took 5 years for this to come to fruition. But yeah, super cool. We'll link to where you can check it out on this episode's page.
It's a cartoon. It's a spinoff. It's an intro. Fuck it. I don't know.
Thanks, Bob Iger. All right. So here we stand on the precipice of the blast doors. But before we go beyond them, we got to let you know the State of the Empire is entirely fan supported. We wouldn't exist without you fine folks helping us stay alive and supporting the Nerdy Show Network. You can do that through a number of means. Perhaps the one most related to Star Wars is if you want to spend money through Amazon, you should do it through our Amazon portal. That's at nerdyshow.com/Amazon. You can bookmark it and make it the only way that you go to Amazon, or follow any of the links on this episode's page as well. Anytime we talk about something that's like forthcoming, for example, the Rogue One novel by James Luceno, well, you can pre-order that through our Amazon link, and you can make some money for Nerdy Show at no extra cost to you. If you do any huge purchases, you can always just let us know. Send us an email and be like, yo, I bought all this crazy stuff. Give me a shout-out. And we totally will, because you earned it. Other ways you can support us include one-time donations, as well as subscribing on Patreon. We have a ton of bonus content there for all subscribers, including, well, early releases, and a lot of bloopers from State of the Empire, actually, over the years. Lots and lots and lots of those. So if you go to nerdyshow.com/support, you'll see all the different ways to support us. And if you want to do something that involves no money whatsoever, well, you could tell a friend, because you probably have some friends who like Star Wars, and some of them might also be interested in listening to podcasts. Get them hooked on State of the Empire, or leave a review or a rating on iTunes. Just log into iTunes, click 5 stars, and you're good to go, unless you want to write some words about us. They don't even have to be too many words. You can just say, I like Willow Watch.
Let's take this podcast to the skies. If someone writes that in a review, we're definitely reading that
one. Yeah,
we're
reading that one, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's take this podcast to the skies. I don't know. Fuck it. That inside joke is from last episode. Go ahead and dial back to that one if you want to know that.
Let's keep it going, though. Let's just bring it through every episode now.
Hashtag I don't know, fuck it.
At Bob Iger, hashtag I don't know, fuck
no,
it.
No, please don't do that. He doesn't deserve it.
Hashtag Bobby I.
All right, guys. If you're leaving now, we'll see you next time. And for the rest of you brave souls, let's go behind the blast doors.
Open the blast doors. Open the blast doors.
All right. So I kind of lied. I said there wasn't any Rogue One stuff over here, but there actually kind of is. And it's something it's so like not a big deal. I wasn't even sure if it was worthy of being behind the blast doors. But for any of you folks expecting to see Emperor Palpatine in this film, don't waste your energy. Ian McDiarmid says he's not in Rogue One.
That's what a Sith Lord would say.
One other Rogue One thing. There was an observation about the TIE fighter in the Rogue One trailer, the one that, you know, Jen's on some kind of walkway and this TIE fighter bobs up. And one of you guys noticed something about it in relation to the sizzle reel that they released a while back.
Yeah, definitely. In the Comic-Con making of video, there's a shot from a kind of a, I don't know, side angle of that same walkway with Jin walking down it, and it shows her kind of getting blown back with wire work. So it seems like that TIE fighter probably gets exploded while she's approaching it. So, like, I'm picturing in my head, like, she's walking forward all badass, points a gun at it, and then someone externally blows that shit up.
Sort of like the end of Saving Private Ryan?
Just like that.
And if that is someone there to rescue her, and they swoop down in a U-wing or whatever, you know, whatever it might be, and then, you know, escape with the looks like the sky falling out around them in that most recent trailer, like when all the dirt's coming down, that would be very similar to a shot from one of the cutscenes in Jedi Knight Dark Forces 2, in which a TIE bomber lifts up, you know, kind of comes from below a sky dock on Nar Shaddaa, and starts the fire at Kyle Katarn, and then Jan Ors blows the TIE bomber out of the sky. Kyle Katarn gets knocked over, and she rescues him. So we got another little Dark Forces callback there. Probably not intentional, just because it is a cool sequence that I think has a certain universal idea of, like, wouldn't it be badass if we did this?
And the answer is yes.
Yeah. Moving on to episode 8. Got some news about the Ireland filming. We know that because of the environmental sensitivity of Skellig Michael, the island where the Jedi Temple stuff has been filmed largely, they did have to film other scenes elsewhere in Ireland for what the planet's being called Ahch-To. A family on vacation spoke with an eyewitness of the filming that took place in Malin Head and described beehive-like huts. It appears that the Knights of Ren disturb Rey's Jedi training, and they filmed fight scenes with Chewbacca, which is the first anybody's heard about. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer because he's there, but we've heard lots of reports about fight scenes at Ahch-To, and none of them have mentioned Chewbacca until now.
Oh, dude, what if Lumpy's one of the Knights of Ren?
Oh, we could only dream.
It's like, subtitle, take off that mask. And he's like, no, don't do this to me. Please, not again.
That prospect of Chewbacca being involved in this fight, also surprising that I didn't think about it either. It's creating a lot of conflict within me, because at one moment, I think a Knight of Ren, one-on-one or two-on-one or seven-on-one should just absolutely destroy Chewie. Not kill him, maybe, but like definitely kick his ass. But come on, it's a chance to really elevate Chewbacca into sort of elite status if he can take out at least one Knight of Ren.
Yeah, well, he couldn't. He couldn't take out Kylo.
And also, we saw early sketches of Chewbacca from episode 7 where he was missing an arm or a leg or something.
That's right.
Oh, man, it'd be so fucked up if, like, he starts fighting the Knights of Ren, they just, like, slices arm
the
off,
movie
like...
opens and Chewbacca loses a limb. Yeah. Could you fucking believe that?
No, I could. That'd be crazy.
I have a feeling the limbs are going to be flying off in this movie. Seriously. At least 4 or 5 of them.
At least.
We'll screen episode 8 and we'll have a limb counter.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a great fan comic that someone did online after Force Awakens came out, where it was the scene where Han Solo dies and it cuts to Chewie up in the, you know, on the what do we call them? The
ramparts.
Ramparts, that's it. He's up on the ramparts and he's looking through the scope of his bowcaster. And he sees, you know, he's looking at Kylo Ren through the scope, and he has a quick flashback to when Kylo Ren is just a baby, and Han Solo's passing him to Chewie, just being like, don't worry, little fella, Chewie won't hurt you, he's our friend. And, like, they just share this moment, you know, whatever, it's like, oh, it's my life mate's, you know, son and everything, and it's like this really sweet thing, and then it cuts back to the moment, and Chewie, like, can't quite pull the trigger, you're looking through his scope, and then he lowers the sights on the scope down, not on Kylo's head, but like lower to like where it would just maim him and not kill him, and that's the shot he took, which is why Kylo didn't die. Why he couldn't kill Kylo outright. And I'm like,
I believe it.
Yeah, okay, whatever. But I'm thinking it would be cool if he's there and, you know, Luke is doing his thing, Rey's doing her thing, Knights of Ren show up, he kicks their ass, but then he gets Kylo in his sights and he's just like hesitant because it's Han's kid, you know. And then in that hesitation, whoomp, limb comes off. And it's like, fuck! God damn it, Chewie! You just should have done it! You should have done it already! I'm just saying, he's useless.
That's son a of summary. A bitch.
He's as useless as Zuvio is.
Oh, you scum. Whoa,
come on!
Scum!
I'm just saying, you know that...
Make me
that,
sick.
Who was the droid that tried to... Not the droid. Who was that thing in the face freak that tried to steal BB-8 before Rey saved him?
Scavenger. Tito.
Yeah. Where was Zuvio when that was going down? Where was Zuvio when the Ties were attacking?
Busting actual crimes. Doing police work.
Stuffing his fat face with space donuts.
Oh, my goodness.
He's keeping the little guy safe.
Yeah, keeping the little guy safe while the First Order destroys a dirt market. Like, there's like...
You're a dirt
guy.
Market.
Just saying. Don't seem so brave to me. I don't understand.
One final note about the Ireland shooting. It took place at dusk. That's all we got.
Gwendolyn Christie as Captain Phasma. She's listed as being in episode 8. Do we know anything about Phasma being in episode 8?
Like, yeah, I want to... Some executive said, we have big plans for Phasma.
That doesn't say shit.
It was Kennedy. Okay.
Yeah. Big plans for her even in The Force Awakens. Look how that turned out.
You know what? And this is on me because I don't galvanize people when I have a good idea. I need to make an episode 8 parody video that is basically just... It's Les Mis, but instead of the prisoner number that Javert has in Les Mis, it's her hunting for FN-2187.
Yeah, that's the kind of movie I want. It's just her hunting him down.
But I want it to be a musical. I want to do a Phasma musical. That's what I'm trying to do.
How are you trying to do this with editing?
No, I wanted like a YouTube fan film. Basically a parody of the 24601. The song in Les Mis where he uses the prisoner's number. That's what Javert constantly refers to him as, by the number. Just like...
Right.
Phasma does, so I think that's what it should be, is Phasma hunting down Jean Valjean. She would be hunting down FN-2187.
Now, Making Star Wars reported on what they're calling the space bomb sequence in episode 8, which led to an interesting conversation about code names. They've been using a lot of code names in episode 8, and actually maybe even a bit less than they did in Force Awakens, because in Force Awakens, actors had code names, and now they're just numbers, which makes it impossible to tell who anybody is unless you know what they are. Hmm. For example, there's a set that's called the Hundred Acre Woods after Winnie the Pooh. And the sequence in the Hundred Acre Woods features 22 sugar cubes and 5 grizzlies.
Hmm. See, if you were going to say character number 3, well, that's 3PO, character number 2, that's R2, character number 8, that's BB-8, you can see where this is going.
Uh-huh.
Ben Solo, maybe that's character number 1?
Well, he thinks he's number 1. I don't know what his call sheet
actually
says.
No, he thinks grandfather's number 1.
So this scene in the Hundred Acre Woods is apparently pretty action-packed. It had 10 firemen on standby as a precaution. It takes place in space, and either based on the floors and the amount of safety they had to have about scuffing the floors, it is either the First Order is boarding a resistance ship or a small band of resistance fighters are boarding a First Order ship. That's been unclear from the reports. There's some green screen, what looks like it'd be a CGI crowd, and removal of rigs in all the green screen setups. There's explosions from thermal detonators planted by a group who are codenamed the Grizzlies. And the sugar cubes, which everyone assumes are First Order stormtroopers because they're white, they needed an hour to get dressed up on set. So the Grizzlies also needed that time as well. So whoever the Grizzlies are, they take about as much time to get ready as stormtroopers do. The best guess for the sequence involves Finn, Kelly Marie Tran's character, who's wearing a medal because there was a prop call for her wearing some kind of a medal, and it was a character meeting the description of the actor Kelly Marie Tran, whose character we know nothing about, and then also a resistance technician of some kind as they go up against a squad of First Order stormtroopers. Here's the specific description. Scene 213, interior, Hundred Acre Wood, hangar, grizzly weaponry, cast 7 medallion, handcuffs, axes and mace, debris, grizzly associated paraphernalia, clipboards, glasses, bags, headsets, grizzly bombs, grizzly belt with bombs attached. That's all, I guess it's not the scene description, but that's all the information we have about the scene itself.
I'm excited, but I'm confused.
Yeah. Exactly.
So I don't.
Grizzlies kind of sounds like resistance or rebels to me.
Grizzly sounds like Ewoks to me, which sounds more exciting.
They've come a long way since Return of the Jedi. They're a very important faction in the resistance.
Yeah, like a strike force of highly trained Ewoks, like all stealth and small. That'd be amazing. Yeah, I think that's our next D&D campaign.
There were therapy Ewoks in Bloodline.
What do you mean therapy? Oh, yeah. Explain. Matt, like a therapy dog?
Please, please, God, share this. In the name of Teek, share this.
Or I'm sorry, it wasn't Bloodline. It was in the most recent Aftermath book. Following the Battle of Endor, some Ewoks became like therapy Ewoks to be like comforting companions of some of the rebel soldiers, particularly ones that had suffered like missing limbs and things like that. Like it was basically to help with PTSD.
Would that work for a lot of the rebel soldiers? Be like, my friends died because of you, you little son of a bitch. like you couldn't get the shield out in time. Why couldn't you do it? And just,
one of the doctor in Aftermath Life Debt, the actual quote was, I could put you in for a therapy Ewok instead. Some of the native Endor creatures have agreed to travel off world to help veterans like you recuperate as a matter of recompense for saving their home.
That's so weird. Can you imagine an Ewok of all creatures? Like, I mean, the fucking expanded universe says that god-awful motherfucker from the special edition Jabba's Palace, Joe Yauza, the singer, the weird Muppety singer that they added in, that he is a native of Endor and somehow traveled from Endor, ended up on Tatooine and is a singer in Jabba's Palace now. Fuck that. But
actually, I never realized that. Yeah, I'm actually a little disappointed in that as well.
It's so fucking awful of all the things. But I mean, Ewoks leaving Endor, willingly leaving Endor, like, holy crap, they have no idea what they're in for. And
yeah,
I mean, being like doing a service, but also being slaves or a pet, even though they're like fully, you know, cognizant, like Aboriginal people.
You know, you could treat that they're more like a counselor. You know, they're not like a pet. Like, your job isn't to just literally pat them on the head and feel better. Like, I'm sure they might help you cook a meal if you're depressed and shit. You know, and they hang out with you. They probably
That's a slave, Doug.
Go get you a beer. No. It's not a slave if they're volunteering as a way to say thank you to, like, these veterans
for saving their world. Do you guys think any of the Ewoks would become, like, strippers?
to do what? Just like, ooh.
They're already wearing almost nothing anyway.
I can see your neck. Like, that's all they're hiding. And they wear the hats, but that's it. Everything else is fur.
Just thinking about it.
just thinking aloud.
Just thinking out loud, yeah.
I think there's a great one-shot comic in there, a comic book of a therapy Ewok meeting with like a disgruntled rebel soldier veteran who lost his buddies at the Battle of Endor.
And they both become strippers.
No, they become lovers.
Oh. I was going to say they just become good friends and maybe start touring around the universe solving mysteries, but, you know.
Boring.
with that lovely buddy adventure and or surprising erotica for it to stew over.
Vote with your pens. Write the fan fiction. Whoever gets the most votes best wins.
Yeah, post to the Nerdy Show forums. And, hey, also post to the Nerdy Show forums your scores in Star Wars Battle Pod. We need more contenders.
Yeah, skies up there are pretty lonely.
Thanks so much for listening. Bye, I'm Cap.
Bye, I'm Doug.
Bye, I'm Matt.
Bye, I'm Rex.
Taking us out is a track called Wanna Be Your Jedi by Cyfried with Mikey Mason. This is from Cyfried's 2012 record Co-op Mode, where they played alongside some of their other musician friends, including MC Lars, Kirby Crackle, and Mark with the C. You can find music by all those people on nerdy.fm, our nerd music streaming service. Listen to it on the website or via our Apple or Android apps. And this track, well, in some ways it's kind of an inadvertent lesson in how making reckless Star Wars references can lead to some really inappropriate lyrics. Let's see if you can find them. This is Wanna Be Your Jedi by Cyfried with Mikey Mason. Come out.
Thanks for listening to State of the Empire. If you liked what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes, like and follow us on SoundCloud and Audioboom, or subscribe and stream on Google Play. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network, and there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com and be sure to follow Nerdy Show on all your favorite social networks. If it's geeky, we've got it covered.
What is Kylo Ren's least favorite condiment? Rayonnaise.
That's shit, Doug.
I know. To make it better, I got a Star Wars Yo Mama joke.
Is that somehow going to apologize for what you just did to us?
Maybe. Yo Mama's so fat, the Death Star had to wait until Yavin 4 emerged from behind her before it could take the shot.
God damn.
That's pretty fat.
Shit.
This is the worst.
He's never coming back.
He's in the worst.
This is the worst.
Hey, if you find a better Star Wars joke, let me know.
Okay.
You got a good Star Wars joke in you?
No.
Yeah, that's what I thought. At least I'm bringing something to the table. I'm doing this for you.
Well, I guess thank you.
You're welcome. Turn that one around good.
God damn it.
Take that bark to the skies.